In the 90s, there was a band that cropped up that rose to quick fame, and I think they caught a feeling in the air, and this is a big part of why they became so popular. They're somewhat anti-establishment, and honestly, I didn't really know their music, but I knew their name. Rage Against the Machine. They saw that there are forces behind the scenes that want to control our lives, rob us of our humanity, and they went about all kinds of ways of letting us know that this was true. I think they really caught a spirit, a frustration that we tend to have at that feeling, like there are forces behind the scenes wanting to control us and keep us down. Now, they pointed to government, banking systems, all kinds of things. You know, true enough, governments can have all their problems. Systems are imperfect. But we know with a biblical imagination that, in fact, the machine is evil and darkness itself. It is, in fact, behind the scenes of any evil act, any evil institution. It does want to control our lives and rob us of our humanity. Particularly, I find, through bondage to money. Now, this morning, we all have a pledge card in our hands. I'm going to pick mine up too here. And I wonder how this makes us feel to have a pledge card, an invitation to reflect on how the Lord may be leading you towards specifically giving to this church in the year 2025. That is a part of what we're doing. We'll take these home, and in 2 weeks' time or so, we'll turn in the ways that we feel like the Lord is leading us. You see this handy perforated spot here. I'll speak more about those details at the announcements, but you know, this is a little bit different for the Vine. We haven't done this before, but it does help the Vine's leadership to plan well, to look ahead, to steward the resources that the Lord is giving us to steward. What I'd like us to focus on this morning in particular, though, is that this is perhaps more so an invitation for us to talk with God about our posture towards money. This is deeply spiritual work. We can reflect on the giving that God might be leading us into. But it also invites, as we reflect, a greater gospel freedom as we talk with God about what he has given us. This morning, I'd like us to learn from three stories, our readings, that have to do with money. I'd like us to notice some particular invitations that lead towards gospel freedom. And I want to bring the machine into the back of our minds. I think it's a helpful idea because I don't think we get angry enough at the ways that the devil robs us of our humanity through our posture towards money. So this morning, what is our posture towards the machine? How does it work to keep us in bondage? And how does Jesus invite us into greater freedom? So we're going to look at resting against the machine, giving against the machine, and God against the machine. First, turn to your Exodus 35 passage here. We'll just dip into these. Now, where we catch Moses in the story, he has just come down the mountain from spending some deep time with the Lord, so much so that his face is all kinds of shiny. Too much for the people of God. He has to wear a veil over his face. Too much holiness. Too much time with the Lord. They can't handle it. What is the first thing that Moses does when he gets to the bottom of the mountain? He gathers God's people and says, Sabbath, rest. It's so important to God that we Sabbath to the Lord, as our passage says. Sabbath, you know, it's one of these things that I think we oftentimes feel is an optional add-on to our faith. It's one of the Ten Commandments, Sabbath. It is perhaps the longest of the Ten Commandments. It gets the most ink, perhaps as much as the rest of the other nine. It is particularly a 24-hour period where we stop from working. Whatever it is that you do, stop it. You connect with the Lord. You find particular ways to do that. And we find ways to delight in God's creation around us and delight in the particular provision that he's given each one of us. In our Vine groups, we're talking about this. We've talked about it recently. And God invites us into creativity around figuring out how each one of us is meant to Sabbath, rest. This is not another thing for your to-do list. It's a life-giving practice that takes sacrifice, but is ultimately for our good. So, we're talking about giving. Why do we start with Sabbath? Sabbath rest, for God's people, it was a protest against the Egyptian machine. Without Sabbath, they forgot their humanness. Remember, when God's people were enslaved in Egypt, they were worked nonstop, no day to rest. They were used to build pyramids and monuments as fast as possible. They were treated more like cogs in a machine than humans made in God's image. And so after Egypt, God's people still had a hard time sort of getting that shell off of them. They needed the Sabbath every week to proclaim God, in fact, is our king, not a machine. And we are not gears dehumanized beyond recognition. We are humans made in God's image, and we are valuable not because of what we produce, but simply because he loves us. We are freed to rest, and resting frees us into greater creativity in our work. But so often we are much more comfortable being told you are what you do, aren't we? We agree with that understanding. You are what you do. When we constantly pack our days too full, we agree that you are what you do when we recognize our bodies and our minds diminishing as we age, and we feel like our value to the world is less. We agree that you are what you do when we overschedule and overdemand our employees or our kids or our households. We agree that you are what you do when we are uncomfortable with a slightly more relaxed schedule. I still do stuff. It's so easy to agree with this statement. The machine says, everything that you do is worthless unless you're producing something. But God says, stop calculating your worth based solely on what you produce. You are loved. So protest, rest against the machine. No, it's not easy. It is costly, then and now. If you took a day off in the middle of a harvest season, that's real money that you're not making, that all the other nations were making. Today, if you have a promotion that you're really gunning for and you actually take a full day off of work, you might not get that promotion. If you're building houses in the wake of a hurricane and you take a day to cease from that, that's one less room that gets cleaned up and taken care of. Do we trust God enough to provide for our needs and the needs of others and stop, rest, as we're made to do? You are loved. You are provided for more abundantly than that one extra day of work could ever provide for you, if we can only receive it. So, how might the Lord be inviting you to rest in him in a new way and not work for the machine? Give against the machine. The biblical imagination always holds Sabbath and giving together. Paul, in our passage, he's following up on an invitation he made in 1 Corinthians. So turn to your 2 Corinthians passage. In 1 Corinthians, Paul, you know, talked with this church about taking up a collection for the Lord's people on the first day, right? On the Sabbath day that they'd gotten used to. One commentator said, the encouragement to financial giving helps us understand the true meaning of Sabbath. One was to deny oneself an income on the Sabbath as a symbol of dependence on God's provision every day, not just the one day, and take from one's income, giving it for the benefit of others. These are both costly invitations for us. It's a big ask. Giving, just like Sabbath, is a protest against the machine. The Roman machine, in particular, held that if you had money, then you had power. If you didn't have money, you didn't have power. If you didn't have a little bit of land or a little bit of something set aside, you had no influence on the way that things worked in their culture. And the way things worked was to keep it that way. If you didn't have anything, you had no hope of getting anything. The machine constantly told its people, "You are what you can buy." Now, our modern machine isn't so different. It's a little bit different, not so different. We still need giving and Sabbath in just as desperate a way. Our modern machine says, do as much as you can so that you can earn as much as you can, so that you can buy as much as you can. You are not only a doing being, you are a buying being. Certainly, we can look around at, say, the cost of a commercial during the Super Bowl or things like that to see how materialistic our culture can be. And it's hard not to get sucked into that. It's hard not to get sucked into the Amazon one-click purchase button, which I find myself joking about constantly because I just buy another book or buy another, electric soap dispenser, you know. You've moved towards something, and they make it as easy as possible for you to make that purchase before you've really connected with the wisdom of it, right? It's the same reason for the tenfold rise in buy now, pay later loans, where you can purchase something that you may or may not really need and pay for it in the future. And it's catching so many people in just this system of interest that they can't find themselves getting out of. We do live in a machine that begs for freedom. It is too easy for us to be defined by our money, the money that we do have or the money that we wished we had. Jesus talks about money more than any other topic. 15% of the verses that are written, you know, in his voice are in one way or another about money. 11 of his 39 parables are about money, one way or another. So we need to not be afraid of talking about money because we're certainly being taught about it when we go out of our church walls. Money is the one of the things that Jesus most clearly calls out as an idol. You cannot serve God and money. He's pretty clear. If Jesus raged against anything, it was money. Yeah, that little incident in the temple with the tables. He's constantly putting a spotlight on our relationship with money because it is central to our relationship with him. When Zacchaeus gives fourfold in return to those that he robbed from, Jesus didn't say, good job. He said, salvation has come to this home. How important is our posture towards money in our relationship with Jesus? Give generously against the machine. This is our invitation. Now, Paul says in our passage, I am not commanding you. I'm going to read a couple of the verses here that he says, because I think this is pretty important for us. He says, we want you to know about the grace that God has given to these Macedonian churches. In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. He goes on later to say, I hope that you can complete this act of grace on your part, this giving to these churches in need. See that you also excel in the grace of giving. Why does Paul call this a grace? grace, being given something that you don't deserve. Why is giving a grace in Paul's mindset? It seems counterintuitive, especially if you're in debt that you feel like you can't get out of. And hear me say, if that is you, if you feel like you're in an uphill battle with paying off the debt that you're in, please don't stay in isolation. A part of the calling of the church to be generous is to make sure that we are all in a more stable position, taking care of one another. So please don't stay in isolation in that place. Paul's grace that he speaks of here, when we give generously, is that our capacity to know gospel freedom is itself expanded. Listen to verse 9, what he says in the same passage. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich. When we give generously, we are practicing something of a spiritual physics. We're inviting the power of the gospel to widen our souls, to break us just a little bit more of our bondage to the things that we own or the things that we do, the things that we want to buy. Rowan Williams, former Archbishop of Canterbury, said, "Giving generously is being caught up in the flow of God's gracious giving towards us. The sacrificial giving of the Macedonians is in the nature of sacrament. It speaks of an outward form of an inward grace." When we give, we are inviting the grace of Jesus over and over again to widen our capacity to know freedom. N.T. Wright says about the New Testament's assumptions, he says, the New Testament assumes that followers of Jesus will be giving. Now, I wish I could spend all kinds of time right here just checking in on each of us where we are in this conversation, because I know many of us have been hurt by the ways that churches speak about money. Many churches get it wrong. Many churches accidentally or intentionally compel us. You need to do X, Y, Z thing in your giving. Remember Paul saying, I'm not commanding what I'm asking of you here, but I want you, I long for you to receive the grace of the call to give. Here are just a few thoughts around giving from the New Testament perspective. Generosity is an assumption for a heart changed by Jesus. As we have received his generosity, that changes our hearts to have a more generous posture towards the world around us. That means your church family is a good option, but don't let that limit you. We can be generous in the world all around us in creative, unplanned, and planned ways. But we need to receive the grace of letting go just a little bit. Even if you can't give now, make generosity like that a goal in faith. Again, our posture towards what we own, what we make, is central to our faith. I want to close just by looking briefly at our Matthew passage. Jesus is given a pretty tricky political question here. You know, should we pay the imperial tax or not? This is something that had been keeping the Jewish faith down for so long. This is a tax on top of the normal tax in the Roman Empire. So anyone who's not a natural Roman, you know, this is part of the machine kind of keeping them down, they had to pay more. They weren't allowed to gather wealth. That would mean that they had power. So Jesus says, show me a coin whose image is on it. Caesar's image is on this coin. And not just that, but an inscription of his claim to divinity, right? Caesar is somebody that you're meant to worship. This is the very reason Jews were not allowed to press any images under their coinage. Because Caesar's coins basically say, I own you. Any power that you have to buy or purchase, any coins in your pockets that are rattling around, I don't know if they had pockets back then, however you carry your coins, all of them are rattling, I own you. So it was breaking a Jewish rule for these Pharisees who came along and asked Jesus this question to even have a coin in their pocket. That was the first part of Jesus' jiu-jitsu there. But Jesus also knew that not paying this tax was a deadly reality. As a boy, Jesus would have known of revolutionaries who pushed back on this tax, tried to fight Rome, push off their imperial tax, literally using the words, give to the Gentiles what is theirs. And so when Jesus comes back in his stuck place, the stuck question, and wisely answers, give back to Caesar's what is Caesar's, he's picking up on kind of a sticky situation. They're expecting a revolutionary, but he finds the path of wisdom. He says, give the coins with the image of Caesar back to him. But give the thing that has the image of God back to God. Caesar prints his likeness on these coins, fine. God has printed his likeness on you. We're too often willing to give the likeness of the systems that we are in back to them. But are we willing to open-handedly offer back to the Lord ourselves? All of who we are, bank accounts, jobs included, without reservation. The invitation is to not be mashed down by the machine. Do not let the forces of darkness tell you that you are nothing except what you do or what you can buy. You are a human being created in the image of God. He brings you to life through his love for you if we will only accept it. Unlike Caesar, when we open ourselves to the Lord, give back his image to him, it causes our greater flourishing. So the gospel invitation is that. Will you give everything to the Lord? As we reflect on how the Lord might be leading us to give in 2025, will we hold all that we have open-handedly? Receive the gospel more fully? I could care less about the number that you put on a pledge card, as long as I know you're in this posture. The Lord longs to bring you back to life, to bring us all back to life into greater freedom. You are more than a coin. Let him reanimate you. You are not earning your salvation. Receive it freely, and then participate in the receiving of that grace.